Okay, Cherry Developer News, episode 42, the answer to the ultimate question of the universe, on Monday, January 30th, 2012. I'm Ken Rimple.
And Gordon Dickens.
And Steve Smith.
And we're here this week to talk about tech news, stuff we find interesting in the world of development. So let's see here, gentlemen, it's been a little while, about a week and a half since the last one. And if you're following along, you can go to delicious.com/developer news/42 or the show notes page at techcast.chariotsolutions.com where you can also subscribe. So I'm going to do that now.
Hear that? I should subscribe. Get on board. All the cool kids are doing it.
All right, Gordon, why don't we talk about some spring stuff? Talk about Spring 3.1 a little bit more. We mentioned it in the dev news a couple weeks ago, but we might want to talk a little bit more in depth about some of the topics that you're blogging about and things like that.
Right. Yeah, there's some pretty neat things that I've been playing around with in 3.1. One of the new features that came out is something that's kind of really been missing in Spring for quite a long time, the environment profile support. So that I can actually use an environment variable or inspect the environment and determine which profile to set. And what that would drive is the content or the beans or the configuration of your application based on the environment.
So things like production, test.
Exactly.
Or whatever.
And in one of the demos I put together, I evaluate the environment to see if it's running in Cloud Foundry. If it is, then it switches and uses the Cloud Foundry databases. Otherwise, it just uses a local in-memory database. So you can in local test it, but if you deploy it to Cloud Foundry, it automatically is aware of the environment, and that's all profile-driven. And one of the other, two of the more significant pieces is the complete non-XML support. So originally in 3.0, they turned on a lot of the features to give you some bean configuration specification. So you can actually drive your config through beans. So Java on Java crime, if you will. And so what we do is in terms of the completion, it wasn't there. You still had to have some XML. Well, now in 3.1, you can do complete annotation-based bean configuration. And the cool thing about that is that if you have an application, you're going to ship it out and sell it to clients, you can obfuscate your configuration completely so that there's no source XML to reverse engineer. Mm-hmm. So those are nice things. And then there's a couple other quick ones like cache abstraction. Caching API has been there, but they really didn't do too much with it until 3.1, and I'll be blogging about that very soon. And JAXON support. So JAXON, automatic marshalling of data in and out of JAXON, much like you can do with JAXB in XML space, you can now do a JAXON.
And I understand there's this new C namespace to go along with parameters. There's a constructor namespace?
Right. In the previous version of Spring, you had the P namespace for simplicity of configuration. The C namespace looks good on the surface. You can actually refer to your constructor variables by name, and I thought that was really exciting. The one caveat to it that you just kind of have to keep in mind is in order to use it in deployment, you have to compile and use the Java debug tables have to be compiled, so the -G option has to be used. So I'm not sure if that's something that's going to appeal to people that, to environments where, clients want to deploy the code out and they can't obfuscate it, right? I don't think if you do that. So there's some limitations to it. It seems nice, but I'm not sure if it's got that much downstream value.
So. Okay, cool. And then Spring Integration 2.1, right?
Right. Integration 2.1 came out and now supports has implementations for NoSQL databases like Mongo, Redis, and their Gemfire product. And also in the EIP, more of the messaging space anyway, the AMQP protocol or AMQ protocol, as opposed to AMQPP, that's supported in integration 2.1, and of course their RabbitMQ is the implementation of AMQP that VMware SpringSource owns.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, so that's all the news about Spring. Let me stay in the software development side a little bit. So Rails 3.2 is out. Apparently now the developer mode only recompiles the classes that are being saved, and there's some sort of faster routing mechanism. It turns out this is the last release that's going to target Ruby 1.8.7. So bye-bye Ruby 1.8.7. Rails 4 is the next release on the horizon, so this is going to be a big rev, and it will require Ruby 1.9.3 and above, big jump. instead of 192. They're going to the newest release of Ruby and higher. So that's kind of a pretty strong statement that they're leaving the old Ruby syntax behind. A few things that are newer. You know, you're not staying with that. I mean, that's got to be like a 6 or 7 year old, I'm guessing, or at least 5 or 6 year old version of Ruby, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, let's see. They have also in there an explain queries feature. So in Rails, you can do things like active record queries that you are using with active relation, where you define a method called active. So you could say person.active.limit5, which would say bring back the first 5 people with the query that does the determination whether they're active. Well, now you can do a dot explain at the end, and I'm sure you can do it in the Rails console, so you can end up getting the plan and the SQL that is coming back, at least, that they've selected. So that can be very useful as well. Also, they have a concept of tagging. So you can tag log entries with things like people's usernames and such, so you can kind of get a context for various tags in the log. And also, they've got some sort of key value store thing, which is another special feature where they can actually set kind of a set of key and values for a particular field in a NoSQL type database, I suppose. So pretty cool stuff. Again, it's on GitHub. You can grab it now. There's a tag for it. And also now they're starting development on Rails 4. So if you want to watch what's going on, you might want to watch the Rails GitHub repo and see what's being tagged for 4.0. All right. And that's at rubyonrails.org. You can download that release. Steve, we have you here to talk mobile.
Yay.
Come on, Steve, talk mobile. Talk. Say something mobile. Now.
Moving.
There we go. Hey, he's mobile. Look. Yeah. Let's start off with one that's kind of like Lazarus. So HP earlier in the year, if you want to look at a study in bizarre selections and choices by a company, HP was riding high. They were coming out with their own tablet beginning of last year. You know, they were launching, I guess, what was it, May or something that came out, something along there. And that's the, what was
touchpad.
It? Touchpad, yes. And everyone in the development camp looked at it and went, ooh, this is kind of cool. What was the technology for their operating system? It's WebOS.
It's WebOS. It's basically web technology. So HTML, CSS, JavaScript. It's pretty nice. I did some, you know, sample apps in it. Mm-hmm. And it was nice. And even from a user perspective, it was great usability, had the multitasking, it had a lot of the stuff that... you know, iOS has come to evolve into,
right?
But it's got all the benefits of, you know, the developer skill sets, web-based skills. So it's kind of had a lot of promise.
Right. And so then HP decided to get out of both the computer business and the tablet business right at a time where they really were starting to launch a tablet, which and that was what was the guy's name that ran Apotheker?
No, I can't remember. He just recently left.
Yeah, they were. I don't know if they opened the door and said get out. I don't know. But bottom line is that now they're looking at least keeping the WebOS operating system alive. So the tablets aren't being made by them anymore, right?
No, although it was funny. Just the other day, Woot had a deal on tablets, the 32 gig tablets for $220.
Oh wow!
I almost bought one too.
And so there's some inventory laying around, I guess.
Yeah, that might be the last of them. Although we keep hearing that, so
right,
they keep popping up every now and then.
They're
and
like
at that price,
the Wii
they fly
of the pad. Yeah, yeah. Right. The Wii pad. Okay, so at this point now, but you know the operating system is not dead yet. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So what happened was, I guess back when they decided to give up WebOS, which I can't really remember. I'm thinking maybe was that the fall? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But in
late fall,
it was
December
when they announced that they were going to open source WebOS. No details around it at that point in time, and then they just finally, sometime last week, announced the timeline to release it. And they actually, as part of that, they released the Enyo framework, the 2.0 version. So Enyo 2.0.1. Enyo is a JavaScript framework for building UIs in web. Originally WebOS focused. That was the 1.0. So now the 2.0 version is a little more generic. So you can use it in just to build browser based apps.
So if we're thinking like analogies here, it's kind of like jQuery but native jQuery UI.
Maybe closer to Sentia.
Okay. So it's a widget library. JavaScript based apps,
right?
Okay, but the JavaScript objects you're creating were spinners and lists and
tabs, they have a bunch of components.
They're all native, directly native to the hardware, or at least accelerated by the hardware. Let's say, or maybe
that I'm not 100% sure on. But they'll render. You know what? I haven't tried it because I haven't tried it on like an iOS or Android device.
Oh yeah.
You know, I've only seen it really on WebOS to this point.
So
I'd be curious to see if they render. You know, like a
jQuery Mobile will kind of render some of the more native components. Like if you have a dropdown, it'll give you on iOS, it'll give you a native looking dropdown. You know, that kind of that
the
wheel,
rounded looking feel. Yeah.
Yeah, that wheel kind of feel. And if you run that same code on Android, it'll give you the list of, you know, basically selections where you pick one.
Now, you and I were talking before, and you were saying that, I think you were saying that you could run WebOS apps as a test in a regular browser. Is that right?
No, well, under the new stuff, you can. Before, you would run it in the emulator. They would have an emulator.
Okay. So yeah. I wonder how they do that. That's going to be interesting to see. So technically, you wouldn't even need an emulator to get the basic development up and running, but to get to the... You know, touch features and such, probably you would need something.
Well, yeah, you'd test it on some, you could test it on within a regular browser, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you'd want to test it on a device, too, because, you know, that's different if you're doing mobile-related stuff.
And has anyone announced support for this yet at all, hardware-wise?
For WebOS?
Right.
No, I would imagine, you know, we kind of had a conversation before about
I screwed up the podcast. Yeah. This is part earlier, two of the same podcast I recorded before.
Earlier when I made this point. No. You know, we had discussed a post I read recently about somebody suggesting that Google closed source Android. And, you know, if they went that route, then probably all the Motorola hardware would be Android based and that these other hardware vendors would kind of be hung out to dry. And maybe that's a use case for WebOS, a community based operating system that could then be taken over or forked or whatever. But you know what, pure speculation.
Who the hell knows, right? Well, it's funny. When I was reading, I think Microsoft in the last Dev News, I think you might have sent us this article, that the bootloader, if you go to Windows 8 on a mobile device, on an ARM device, they now have a secure boot system that if you migrate to Windows 8, you will not be able to boot a third-party OS.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They have some secure boot thing. If you look back at DevNews 41, we have a bookmark to that. I don't know who did. Oh, yeah, it might have been Jason tagging that. But that's kind of fascinating. And that's, you know, they just don't want you to put some third-party operating system like, WebOS.
Yeah.
So who knows, right?
It's interesting because I've heard a lot of clamor, you know, from various mobile-type folks out on the Twitter land,
right?
Talking about the need for a browser-based operating system, you know, web-based operating system, and this is it. Now, whether or not people will run with it and build anything, it's really going to depend on the device manufacturers,
to
take advantage of it.
If we'll get an HTC or someone to step up and say, we'll do that.
Yeah, without that, it's really, I can't see it going anywhere.
Right. Especially because you got your trio in the field. You've got your Microsoft, you've got the Apple, and you've got Android.
Yeah.
So a fourth, it's like Sprint trying to compete in a mobile market. Like, how do you become the fourth player when 99% of the people already picked something?
Right.
So that'll be interesting.
So anyway, the WebOS, on that article, the timeline is kind of, they're looking at the fall to have actually a WebOS 1.0 release for open source.
It's a long time out, too, if you think about it. Hey, maybe it'll come out and we'll all be surprised. I mean, Palm was resurrected a number of times, right?
Yeah.
So, and I saw, you know... early on, Don was walking around, Don Coleman, one of our guys, with the WebOS phone. It was a nice little phone.
Yeah, and the funny thing is he has a touchpad. And, you know, I've used it. It's a great device. It really is a very nice operating system. It's just, you know, it's like the VHS Betamax thing, right?
It's
the best one doesn't
Amiga.
Always win.
Yeah, it's the Amiga. Yeah. All right, good. So, and then the last thing we have for this week, it's kind of a quick week, twice, is the top 10 JavaScript MVC frameworks reviewed. Now, so this is one of those, you know, lists to get attention, I suppose, to some degree. But it's a blog entry about, you know, a number of different presentation MVC frameworks for the web tier. So we've all, most of us anyway, as developers, if we've done any web development at all, have had the MVC on the server side, right? So there's client MVC. What's that all about?
Yeah, so this is, you know, this is designed these days. A lot of apps, a lot of browser-based apps seem to be, you know, you manipulate the client, the UI on the client within the browser, and you kind of get your data from a server side via AJAX or something like that, and then pull it down and adjust your UI accordingly. So that's all written in JavaScript. So you start getting into larger apps and it just becomes a mangled mess. You know, you have no structure to your code, just like it did on the server side, right? There's no difference here. So what these frameworks are aiming to do is add structure around your code along with, you know, convenience-based APIs to help, you know, make your code a little more terse.
And so they have names that are kind of interesting. Gordon, you were remarking about, what was it, the Sammy and other ones?
There's Sammy, and then there's some other product called Raphael.js. And, you know, of course,
Batman.
Steve, I didn't pay attention to it, but Steve mentioned that, yeah, he's got there's miscellaneous body parts and or, you know, internal, you know, organs.
Ember. I'm not sure how Ember makes it into that. But
and then when you talk about, like, UI frameworks, there's, like, handlebar. There's mustache and there's handlebars. You
know. Right, right.
Mm. They go on themes.
Ah, okay. So yeah, so just to be clear here, this is just an MVC framework. This isn't GUI widgets, right?
Right. Well, I don't know if some of these may. Mm-hmm. You know, this particular blog post was somebody doing an analysis based on their requirements for what they needed from a JavaScript MVC type framework.
Right, like Google Web Toolkit widgets. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Backbone, no widgets. You know, you're coding that manually. Use Backbone along with something else, templating, you know, whether it be jQuery or underscore templates it comes with or whatever templating you're choosing. You know, Ember, I think, is probably more widget-based, maybe more like Essentia, I think. Again, I haven't looked
at that. But what all these have together is they have models, they have a view layer, they've got controller-type things.
Right, right.
Okay. Yeah, and you've used, what, one or two of these, or at least done some work in Backbone, is that right?
Yeah, I've done some work. I just did a recent project with jQuery Mobile and Backbone, which I'm blogging about now. And I've done a little bit early with the Sprout Core 1.0 stuff, but Ember, which is Sprout Core 2.0 equivalent, has had significant changes. I've heard really good things about that. Any others on these lists I haven't used directly yet? And there's also a companion to this, which is not a companion to this, but another site that's actually very interesting called Todo MVC. It's actually a GitHub repository.
Yeah, we'll put a link to that in the show notes, yeah.
And that is actually building a Todo app using different JavaScript frameworks or combination of frameworks to give a working example of strengths, weaknesses, what each has to offer so that you as a developer can say, okay, well, this is the kind of app I need to build. Let me look at this Todo app. Let me tweak it, play with it, see how it compares to what I'm trying to build, and therefore hopefully point me to, oh, I should be using this framework and this framework.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, this seems like the, you know, it's, we had commented on it again in version one of this podcast, but the emergence of JavaScript has become quite the, resurgence as a platform for both mobile development, for back-end development. You know, we have Node.js for the back-end, and you know, and the products that are these MVC products that are mentioned in the article. There's just so much power in JavaScript, and with Douglas Crockford, the author of JavaScript: The Good Parts, coming to speak at ETE, it's very exciting. It because that changed my mind on it on the value of JavaScript. I had always found it to be challenging. You know, in the early days, it was difficult because we had the problems with the web browser platforms all being different, and JavaScript was a nightmare. So
WebKit, what's that?
Yeah. And now it's a lot more streamlined, and we're seeing it with a lot of the dynamic languages resurging or gaining popularity, Ruby and Groovy and so forth. That the value of JavaScript has really shown.
And I think Crockford's book kind of got to the heart of it. Don't think it's Java. It's not. Yeah. It's closer to Lisp. It's closer to a functional programming language. Treat it like that and try to ignore the bad parts and focus on the good parts, which is basically what his thesis of his book is.
Right.
And also, I should mention, we also have the creator of Sprout Core and then Ember, Yehuda Katz, who's always a regular at ET. He's been great at coming back every, I think he's been here 4 times now. But every time he brings something new, and he's going to talk about Ember. So you'll get to see what the new version of Sprout Core is and what it's all about. But it almost feels like we need another framework shootout. I wish we could do one about JavaScript frameworks. Maybe that's the 2013 thing, you know, or we can convince people to do it. But there's only a little representation. There's some people coming from different ones. But maybe in a year or two, things will shake down enough where we can get them all on stage and say, which one should we use?
Yeah, that would be cool.
Which ones should we use together? So... All right, but we'll post a link to that in our show notes. We'll post a link to all these articles, as well as the link to the GitHub repository for the samples you were talking about. That looks very interesting. We already downloaded it in the first version of the podcast. So, and you can't hear that one because it was really, really bad because I distorted everything.
Well, if the price is right, we could negotiate something.
That's true. Yes. Yes. How much do you get for free?
How much pain would you like?
Yes, yes. All right, so that's it. So, again, this is episode 42 of the podcast. If you want to find out more about Chariot, whose sponsors pays us to be here for doing good work for our clients. You know, we do consulting and we do training and mentoring in open source technologies like Java, Ruby, Rails, Python, mobile applications integration. So if you need people to help you solve complex problems in your projects, please look us up. We're at chariotsolutions.com. Also, we are the sponsors of Philly Emerging Tech, or the creators of Philly Emerging Tech, which is a show we've had for 7 years now. It's going to be held downtown in Philadelphia on April 10th and 11th. And again, lots and lots of good speakers, including one of our keynotes is Alex Payne of Twitter fame. So, yeah, so that's it. And that's at PhillyEmergingTech.com. You have 2 weeks between now and the middle of February to take advantage of the early bird discount. I suggest you do. It's a fantastic show. At least 500 people will be there, and it's an old city. It's a great place to have a conference. So, and great people showing up, including even the creator of Ruby himself, Mats. So, you know, if you think that's amazing, just you should look at the list of speakers we have. It's going to be a really good time.
And Ken will be there, too.
And also me. And I'll be having a book signing, theoretically, with Ruin Action, which will be the low light of the week. But no, I'm just kidding. I'm very thrilled to get that out there. So.
Let's just hope you don't get the flu this time.
Yeah, last year I was sick as a dog. So, all right, so that's it. So look us up, chariotsolutions.com. And on this website is techcast.chariotsolutions.com. And you can get the show notes there or on our Delicious site, delicious.com/developer news. And this is episode 42. For the dev news, I'm Ken Rimple.
Gordon Dickens.
Steve Smith.
And make it a good week-ish.